a full array of people here tonight to testify. We've got some bills that we want to work on, at least one that we're going to amend. I'm the chief author of that. Before I do that, though, just a couple of introductions, and they involve some of the people on the front table here. Let me just start with Senator Langsett, former chairman of this committee and certainly a longtime bonding patriot in Minnesota. So welcome, Senator Langsett, and also Kathy Blair, who served as committee administrator for many years. Let me just offer up our new Senate counsel to the committee, Stephanie James. And now Stephanie's got to replace Peter Watson, so she's got to replace an institution. So, Stephanie, I know you'll do well, and while, you know, Peter had its merits, I think you'll have probably more, so we'll do just fine. In addition to that, is Dave Jensen here? There is Dave. Okay. Dave Jensen, a longtime fiscal analyst for the committee. Kathy Detman is the new committee administrator, the committee legislative assistant down here. My legislative assistant as well, Beth Kleinbold. Ed Werner, the research staff, is back there. Dana Elling from the GOP research, is she here? Pardon me, DFL research, is she here?
Mr. Chairman, I believe.
Okay. And then lastly, Barb Miller is our page, and she's here as well. So why don't we get started? As I said earlier, as is obvious, we're in a flood season, and that's probably going to be the case for the next couple to several weeks. And so, again, we wanted to gather up and talk about the flood bills that we had before us and move those along. The intent here as we complete our testimony would be to hold these over for inclusion in a bill that we'd try to match up with the House and move something forward along with our respective leaderships and so on and so forth. The bill that's going to initiate this is Senate File 664, and that is a bill that was brought to us by or through the governor's office and to which I'm authoring. But to that bill, we want to do a delete all amendment, and that would be a bill that Senator Langsett has put together relative to this and a lot of, as you know, the flood area. Well, it extends all over the state. It's certainly prominent in what I call, if you're from Rochester, northwest Minnesota. So, Senator Langsett, to the Senate File 664, we have an amendment. It's an A3 amendment. Do you want to offer that?
I move that amendment. Should I explain it before they vote, or should I?
You can if you'd like.
Well, this bill, we did a lot of communicating and tried to figure out just what is needed this coming year. I always tried to have enough state money available so that nothing got held up because of lack of state money. And in working with Kent Lacusmo from the department and so on, we came up with a figure of $55 million. Now, that compares with $63.5 million was last year, and that is pretty much all committed. But just for those of you who haven't had the background on this, in 1997 we had a very severe flood up in the Red River Valley. It was $4.5 billion worth of damage, and a lot of that was Grand Forks, North Dakota, but East Grand Forks, they had to take out 400 houses. Breckenridge, a lot of the town was destroyed. We spent a lot of money between 97 and 2009, but the 2009 had a higher crest at Fargo-Moorhead than it did in 97, and it had a very small fraction of the damage in the Red River Basin. It took a tremendous effort and so on, but they did manage to protect themselves, which wasn't the case in 97. Now, since 2009, we've also spent a lot of money. Like I say, last year, just $63,500,000. Moorhead spent $37 million just the last 2 years. But many of the cities in that area now are getting very close to being wrapped up as far as being protected, and that includes Moorhead, the Oakport area to the north of there, Breckenridge, Ada, Crookston, Roseau, and, of course, East Grand Forks and Warren are already protected. And then there's some smaller cities along the border. So the idea of this is to take another giant step towards protecting all those those communities in the Red River Valley. So it has $55 million in bonds for this coming year. One thing that wasn't in my bill is there's $10 million for RIM, which would be used in the flood control areas. Other than that, there's those of you who have been through it before, most of these communities are the same. You see it in Section C, pretty long list of communities there. And then in the Red River Basin, the different watersheds on the next paragraph. And that kind of tells you what it's all about. If there are any questions on the amendment, I'll try to answer it. But I would move the amendment.
Senator Lang has moved the amendment. Are there any questions on the A3 amendment? If not, a quorum is present.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Jensen.
I was just comparing some of the cities that are mentioned, and some that were in the original bill are not in the amendment. Is that the intent here? I'm just curious.
Ron Harnack.
Which ones?
Mr. Chairman, I noticed that Newport is not in the amendment. If that's the intent, that's okay. I just noticed.
Mr.
Newport's in it.
Did you check them all?
They're there.
Newport is on line 1.15.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I stand corrected.
Okay.
It has been checked.
Chairman, well, that's the first mistake he's made in years. You got Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. That is probably the first mistake Mr. Jensen has made for years. It will be the last, I can guarantee you. Okay, we've got the A3 amendment. Any questions, discussion on it? The quorum is present. All in favor of the delete all A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. And it is adopted. With that, then, we've got some testifiers, a good number of you out there, and we want to move this along as quickly as possible. The weather is certainly not all that good, and we want to get you home and as soon as we can. So, and nonetheless, we also want to get the testimony. So the first name I have here is Mr. John Finney, John Chair of the Red River Watershed Management Board. So, Mr. Finney, would you come forward, note your name for the tape, and welcome to the committee, and we look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Finney is my name. I'm involved with the Joe River Watershed Management Board in Kitson County. Brief statement to read to the committee, if I may. Thank you for the opportunity to address your committee concerning the ongoing efforts in the Red River Valley to reduce the damages caused by our frequent flooding. I am a farmer from Kitson County, and I'm here today to represent the Red River Watershed Management Board. We are an 8-member joint powers board established by the Minnesota Legislature in 1976. Our membership includes watershed districts from the Bois de Sioux near Lake Traverse on the south end of the basin to the Roseau River, which discharges into the Red River in Manitoba on the north end. In the over 35 years of its existence, the Red River Watershed Management Board has contributed to the construction of 44 retention projects in the Minnesota tributaries of the Red River, which are able to hold 167,000 acre-feet of floodwater for release after the peak flood flows have subsided. The majority of these projects not only provide local flood relief from road and bridge washouts, home and business damage, farmland erosion, and overland flooding, but also serve to reduce the peak flood flows on the main stem of the Red River. In addition, the building of these retention structures has also aided in the establishment of new environmental enhancements such as fish and wildlife habitat, improvement in water quality, and low flow augmentation to the streams. The Red River Watershed Management Board has also assisted in the building of nearly 350 farmstead ring dikes. These levees enable families to protect their property from the flood and maintain normal lives without worry of catastrophic damages. All these activities have not come to fruition without a few obstacles along the way. In the late 80s and the early 90s, the ability to design and build these aforementioned retention projects nearly ground to a halt. It was impossible to get the required permits from state and federal agencies to move these things forward. As a result of this impasse, the Minnesota Legislature ordered that mediation take place between all parties involved, as well as the environmental community. The resulting mediation agreement signed in 1998 has become the guiding principle for all flood damage reduction projects in the Red River Valley. The agreement uses a bottom-up project team approach to each individual project. Each project is then reviewed by the Flood Damage Reduction Working Group. This group has membership from all parties involved with the mediation process. Since its inception, the mediation agreement has offered a nearly seamless transition from grassroots ideas to completed projects. The Red River Watershed Management Board is also involved in the latest methodology for the establishment of new projects. We were the first local government unit to partner with the International Water Institute in its endeavors to create LIDAR mapping of the entire U.S. portion of the Red River Basin. The intricate maps produced by this effort have enabled the designers of flood reduction projects to determine the best possible location for any new structures. The board has also contributed funding and technical expertise for the establishment of a new computer-generated flow model, the Mike 11. This model can not only determine flows on the main stem of the river, but is able to also establish the flow contributions from each tributary as well. By using this new information from each trip from and established criteria, each watershed district will have the knowledge to be able to reduce their flood flow contributions to the Red River to reach the Red Board's goal of a 20% reduction in peak flows at the international boundary. And that's quite important to me because I live within 2 miles of the international boundary. And with that said, we ask that you continue your support for our ongoing flood damage reduction efforts, and thank you very much. I will be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, many. Mr. Finney, are there any questions of Mr. Finney? No questions? Okay. Well, thank you so much. And
Mr. Chairman.
Moving on then, we have Mr. Ron Harnick. Ron's also associated with the Red River Watershed Management Board, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Harnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Harnick, Project Coordinator for the Red River Watershed Management Board, and we strongly support the Delete All Amendment. It includes some clarification of the 2% application to our communities that has been in question before. I think allows for much more efficient allocation of the dollars to protect these communities and reduce the amount of frequent emergency work that needs to be done that ends up costing the state on both ends of that, putting them in place and then taking them back down. And we strongly support that component of it. There's been some addition of some communities and watershed district projects incorporated into this list that are ready to go this summer that are important to have included. The Rim Reserve, $10 million that focuses in on flood related activities has been a good component in helping implement some of our projects in the Red River Valley, particularly using the permanent easement component, has certainly helped with the natural resource enhancement elements of our flood control projects that that we have implemented. Mr. Chairman and members, the goal of the Red River Watershed Management Board is to reduce the peak flooding on the main stem of the river by 20%. From Breckenridge to the Canadian border, that ranges anywhere between 2.7 feet to about 1 foot on the north end. When you look at the benefits of that in terms of enhancing the existing protection of our communities, as well as enhancing the long-term protection of our communities, as well as the flood resilience that we can gain within the major watersheds themselves to significantly reduce the infrastructure damages to county roads, township roads, bridges, culverts, as well as to the agricultural community is very significant. So our objective is to do two things, to have a basin-wide approach to looking at reducing flooding not only on the main stem but also in the tributaries of the Red River Valley. And we do that through strategic location of water retention projects. What I would like to do in moving this forward is to ask each one of our project proposal administrators to come forward, and we'll walk through each one of those briefly to give you an idea of what each of these projects involve, Mr. Chairman. So,
thank you, Mr. Harnick. Before we do that, are there any questions Mr. Harnack's testimony. I do have one. Can you just briefly give us a little bit of a flood forecast relative to your area? How you're seeing it?
Well, I think...
A little too early?
I think it is. You have a handout in front of you that shows some graphical representation of the three basins. We are still looking at very, very significant flooding in the southern half of the basin. It's all going to depend on how it melts. We believe that there's probably not much frost in the ground. Our districts are seeing a lot of infiltration. The streams are running high, but we're also seeing a lot of black dirt out there, at least until we got this foot of snow yesterday and last night.
Mr. Arnett, I have another one as well. If we were to do this bill, at least as written, in those amounts, does that take us along the journey of getting us to this projected 20%, or will it get us there?
Mr. Chairman, this $55 million this year, and if you were able to do another 55 next year, we would do two things. One, we would complete protection of all our communities that have a flood risk in the Red River Valley, and we would take additional steps towards the 20% reduction. We believe it's going to take about 15 to 20 years of maybe somewhere in the range of 10 to 12 million a year to complete the 20% reduction throughout the basin. And money isn't really necessarily the constraint, and it's the ability to move projects along in that time frame, from planning to design to construction. That takes time. And we believe it's going to be at least 100 projects to achieve a million acre feet of storage throughout the basin over that time frame. And so that's going to take a little longer, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Harnack? If not, Mr. Harnack, I've got some names here. Do you want to bring your
Mr. Chairman, then
forward?
I'd call on Dan Money, the administrator of the Two Rivers Watershed District. And if you take a look at the handout that you have that says Red River Watershed Management Board on it, we will walk through each of those projects. If you just take a look at that first page, you will see watershed projects that are either completed, under construction, land acquisition proceeding, or projects that are in a proposed or planning stage. So we're trying to keep things in the queue to be able to keep moving forward so that we can move aggressively towards our ultimate objective. The first one is the Springbrook Flood Control Project in Two Rivers Watershed District.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Is it Money? Mooney?
Yep, Money.
Money. All right. We like that. Okay.
That's what I'm looking for.
Welcome, Mr. Money. Would you state your name for the record?
My name's Dan Money. I'm the administrator with the Two Rivers Watershed District. Our office is in Hallock, Minnesota, and our district encompasses portions of Kitson County, Roseau County, and a small part of Marshall County. And as Ron said, the handout describes the project. This one goes back about 13 years, and there is in about 9 miles west of the city of Carlstead, Minnesota, this waterway meanders for about, it's a 9 mile stretch. And about 13 years ago, the group of landowners along there came to the watershed district and had this problem of water breaking out of this channel. It's an existing water course, but the channel is a small channel. The water that comes from the east comes down off of a ridge, and it breaks out and inundates large areas of private land, cropland, washes out roads, culverts. And the waterway also serves as the outlet for the city of Carlstead for their sanitary sewer and their storm sewer. And so they came to the watershed district looking for a project or some help with this flooding. And we came up with a design that would involve setback levees, a dike placed on either side of the channel back about anywhere from 100 feet away from the channel to about 300 feet away from the channel. And we were able to submit this project plan to the federal NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, And about 2 weeks ago, it took many years. Like I said, it's been about a 13-year project. But 2 weeks ago, we signed an agreement with them for $850,000 of this project. And so now we're looking for leveraging from $130,000 from the state, and then there'll be a local match as well. And so that's basically it in a nutshell. We were able to secure some RIM dollars from the state to the tune of about $360,000, which will help establish the area in between these dikes is going to be grass. So we'll, with all the project, will be the dike construction of the dikes, stabilizing the channel where it's eroded, and doing some maintenance of the channel where there's sediment in there. And then in the end, it will be a wide grass waterway where it'll have some water quality benefits as well. So.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Money. Are there any questions? Mr. Money, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, then I would ask for Rob Sando to come up and speak to the Hay Creek Norland project, which is a project that is already under construction. And we are looking for the last amount of dollars for completing that project. We will complete it this summer. As a matter of fact, Rob said that they're actually out there doing work as we speak. So we're trying to beat the flood a little bit.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sando. Look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rob Sando. I'm the administrator for the Rosa River Watershed District, and our watershed is right west of Lake of the Woods. We have a little over half in the state of Minnesota, and the remaining approximately 45% is in the province of Manitoba. The Hay Creek Project is located northeast from the city of Roseau in Roseau County. The project area includes the lower portion of the Hay Creek watershed and adjacent 37-square-mile Norland subbasin. Hay Creek drains into the Roseau River immediately downstream from the city of Roseau. The project has three features or phases: a 7-mile corridor restoration and floodway, a 3,000-plus acre off-channel impoundment site, and a connection channel. This site will provide a total of at least 9,500 acre-feet of gated and ungated storage. Of the three phases I mentioned, Phase 1 and Phase 3, the corridor and connection channel, are completed. As we speak now, Phase 2 is currently being built of the impoundment area. All the outlets and inlets structures are in place, but not yet operational. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sando. Any questions of Mr. Sando?
And just, Mr. Chairman, on that as well, the impoundment area is a partial wetland. If you're familiar with that neck of the woods, it was used for producing reed canary seed, which isn't very good for wetlands. So part of our project management is to turn it back into native wetland vegetation as part of our management goals and objectives.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, the next project we have is not one that we are looking for specific money this year for a couple of reasons. One is that we didn't get any money out of the Lessard SAMs, which we're trying to achieve. But I would like Myron Jesme to come up and just talk about that project and how far we've progressed and how we're integrating flood damage reduction, clean water money, and Lessard SAMs legacy money with this project.
Welcome to the committee. Was it Mr. Desme?
Jesme, J-E-S-M-E.
Jesme, I'm sorry. Welcome to the committee. State your name and
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Your testimony.
My name is Myron Jesme, J-E-S-M-E, Red Lake Watershed District. We're located, our office is in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. Our district takes parts of 10 counties. We're about 6,000 square miles, the largest watershed district in the state of Minnesota. This project that we're here to talk about today is the Governor's Clean Water Cabinet project. It's a demonstration project that was a pilot project that was initiated back in 2004, 2005. With that, one component of the project was to construct two retention areas, which have been completed. They were completed in 2006 and 2007. We did a channel restoration project in 2008 and 2009. And right now we're on the last part of the project, which is at the Grand Marais Outlet. This project, we went to the Lassard Sams out to Heritage Council 2 years ago. We never got a hearing, but they gave us a hearing last year, 2009. At that hearing, they indicated that part of this project was more clean water than habitat. So they sent us to the Clean Water Council, and we received $662,000 for that project. We are now looking at the restoration of the Grand Marais, which would allow water to stay confined in the channel versus breaking out. And also, we'll treat the downstream areas of these two retention projects that we constructed. This project will be, as you can see on your handout, our engineers have determined about 23% of the project is for flood damage reduction component. 27% we're asking for the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, and the remaining 50% from the Outdoor Heritage Council, and 27% would be local match. Okay. So there's three components. We have went, you know, various different ways to get this project funded, but we're very confident that if we can get Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council funding, we would be able to complete this project. But we'd also like to go to them with the understanding that we have local money, state money, for flood damage reduction portion, but to address the habitat portion through their funding.
Thank you, Mr. Jasmi. I have a question. Is the local match a property tax, or what constitutes local match?
Sure. The local match will come from the Watershed District Project Fund, which is a local match through what Mr. Finney had mentioned earlier through the Red River Flood Damage Reduction funding, the Red River Basin. No, not the Red River. The Red River Watershed Management Board funding that was initiated in 76.
Any questions of the witness? If not, thank you very much for being here. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The next project we have is the Brant Angus project in the Middle Snake Tamarack River Watershed District, and I believe Nick Dreese is here to speak to that project. It is one that is, again, ready to go. We got the land acquired and are ready to proceed with construction on that project in this area.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Dreese. State your name, and we look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Nick Dreese, Administrator for the Middle Snake Tamarack River Watershed District, also in northwest Minnesota, mainly in Marshall County. Brant Angus project sits on a footprint of a mile and a half square area. It receives waters from roughly 20 square miles. Components of the project are, besides the flood retention, a coulee rehabilitation of 7 miles. Also, a couple of feeder ditches, inlet ditches that bring the waters into the site. And then we'll acquire easements on properties for the outlets. As Ms. Arnick said, we have acquired the properties for impoundment. We have engineering drawings completed. We have submitted our permits. We are seeking funding. The project has gone through the mediation process, been recommended by the project, the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group at a 65-35 cost share because of the natural resource enhancements. And once we receive the funding and the permits, we expect to construct in June at the earliest.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Dees? If not, thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And
Mr. Chairman, then I've got two projects. John Rochline, Administrator for the Bois de Sioux Watershed District, got tied up in the storm, could not be here, but I'd like to just review a couple of those projects. I think some of you who have been on our tours have visited a couple of these. One is the Red Path Project. It will provide 16,000 acre-feet of storage in Bois de Sioux upstream from Breckenridge and Fargo area. This project will have significant benefits for Wahpeton and Fargo in reducing peak flows in that vicinity. It will also virtually eliminate the flooding downstream to roads, bridges, and culverts within the county. In addition, we are managing it in, as you can see in the photo there, five different pools. One will be managed for Northern Pike spawning area. Three of the pools will be managed for waterfowl and shorebirds, particularly during the migration season. And the fifth pool will be held for continued storage purposes. The squiggly line that you see on the north side of this project is a restoration of the Mustinka River that the Corps of Engineers channelized back in 1955. We had proposed to include that as part of the flood control project. However, in discussions with the DNR, we felt that since this was primarily a natural resource enhancement project, that we are not going to fund that with FDR money. We are proposing to seek money from the Lessard-Sams Council in order to construct that. And if we do not receive money from Lessard-Sams or other conservation funding sources, that portion of the project will not be completed.
Okay. Thank you.
The next project on that, I know some of you are out there. This is the North Ottawa project, which is a 3,000-acre diked-in area that is in place. The project is the flood portions of this project are done. The only portion that we have left to do is to put additional divider cells within part of this project so that it can be more efficiently managed for wildlife habitat. We have sought money from Lessard-Sams and have not been able to get money from them. For the primary purpose is that we own all the land and it has been designated as a state wildlife refuge, which means that there is no hunting on this portion of the project. Therefore, Lessard-Sams has placed it at a very, very low priority, albeit that the North Ottawa project and the Red Path project are about 7.5 miles apart. The Red Path will be open to public. This one is not, but as most of you know who are in the wildlife habitat or hunting arenas, you got to have places for these wildlife to rest if you're going to be effective in actually being able to draw them into an area and have effective hunting and fishing. So we think the two function very well together, but again, we haven't been able to convince us Lessard-Sams that that they work well together in that fashion. So that's...
So, Mr. Harnack, would this then compartmentalize to some extent the North Ottawa?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We would put another six cells, replacing in addition to the three that are already there, and then we would manage those 160-acre cells consistent with a management plan that we've developed between the Watershed District, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Department of DNR Fish and Wildlife Service for the benefit of both flood as a primary goal. Secondarily, it would be for migratory waterfowl and shorebirds.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, then I want to go back to, if you move on to the next page, is the community levy improvements for the cities of Purley, Hendrum, Shelley, and Felton, and I believe Jerry Bentz, the engineer for the Watershed District, we'll speak to the next two, also speaking to the Climax and Neillsville community levy improvement projects of the Sand Hill River Watershed District.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Bentz, state your name. We look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jerry Bentz, Houston Engineering. As Ron said, I'm speaking on behalf of both the Wild Rice Watershed District, Sand Hill Watershed District, and the six communities listed. Following the 2009 flood, we began development of projects with each of those six communities. They're generally located directly downstream of Fargo-Moorhead, between Fargo-Moorhead and Grand Forks, East Grand Forks. In that process, we had designed the projects to 100-year plus 3 foot of freeboard so that we'd have adequate freeboard for future flooding events. Really speaking on behalf of the amendment that clarifies the level of protection to be afforded using funds from this bill. To to get them to 100 year plus three. Up until now, we were looking at funding that would bring them to 100 year plus one. They're generally about a $2 million project each, adding the additional 2 foot of freeboard. In the city of Purley, for example, is about a 7% cost increase to add the 2 additional feet of protection. I guess one of the reasons we feel it's important to do that is looking at this year's flood prediction for 2011. Had we built the project in Purley to 100 year plus one last year, and looking at the crest predictions from the National Weather Service, there's about a 98% chance that we would have had to go back in this year and actually raise the levee in order to achieve adequate freeboard for this year's flood. So on behalf of the communities, I guess we'd just like to extend the support and the need for the added language to bring them to 100 year plus 3 foot.
Mr. Bentz, I think I know what a freeboard is, but what is a freeboard?
Generally, when you construct levees around communities, we typically have a design elevation that we're designing for. In this case, we'd be designing it for what's the established 100-year flood elevation. From there, then, that elevation, we actually build the top of the levee to be 3 foot higher than that. Okay. And it accounts for a lot of things. For example, in 2009, in some of the communities, we had ice jams on the river adjacent to it, and overnight you might get a raise that comes up 2 to 3 feet. So the added freeboard there just allows for those type of things, wave action, that type of stuff. So.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Bentz? Not Mr. Bentz, thank you so much for coming down and for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask Kevin Rood, Administrator for the Wild Rice Watershed District, to come up to speak to the last two elements of our initiative. One is dealing with, both of them dealing with flood-prone property acquisitions, particularly in the Wild Rice River Watershed District.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Rood, state your name, and we look forward to your testimony.
My name is Kevin Rood. I'm the recently retired county emergency manager for Norman County and just switched to the watershed here back in November. I'm looking to, instead of fighting floods, I'm hoping I can slow them down a little bit. What I'm here to talk about today is we have some properties that we need to get bought out. We had some technical difficulties between the state and FEMA, and we were told that we had approval. We advertised it. We notified the landowners. And come the ninth hour, we found out that there was a problem, and we had to turn around and notify those landowners that they were no longer eligible for FEMA funding. So what we're looking for here is to get the additional funding, which would allow the state to pay up to 100% for these properties that this happened with. And then at the same time, we also have some properties where they were looking for rural ring dikes, and their problem is that they're built so close to the river that the river is not stable enough to hold a dike. And so we're looking at to get additional funding to buy out those homes too. And that's all I have.
Okay, Mr. Rood, are there any questions of the witness? I have, am I looking at this correctly, Mr. Rood? Is it $935,000? Is that the request?
Yes, for these that are, we're looking to buy out with just houses that were built in the wrong spot years ago. And then we're also looking for another $500,000 for the river stability acquisitions on the last page. I'm talking about the last two pages.
And Mr. Chairman, just on those, typically we have money from deed that comes through as part of helping with some of these acquisitions and the FEMA money. But somewhere these five projects got in a place where FEMA said, yes, we're going to take care of them. And then after landowners moved out, they made other commitments. And we wanted to proceed. We find out that, okay, the money's not there, and it's we don't feel that it's very fair that we left these people hang out to dry after making a financial commitment to them. And that's why we think the state should pick up to 100% of the cost. It would be minus what they ever got paid out of flood insurance if they had that. So,
okay. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Rood? Yes, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So really the ring dikes are not really ring dikes. They're just, these are all purchases that...
Mr. Correct. Rood?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Because actually I suppose ring dikes would have to be general fund cash,
right,
of which it's been very hard around here this year. Right.
And Mr. Chairman, on that point, we have constructed about 350 ring dikes throughout the basin over the last 10 years. And after the last flood, we had a little additional bonus in that the NRCS came to the table with $2 million through the EQIP program to help build farmstead ring dikes. They don't help with just rural ring dikes, but they did help significantly with the farmstead ring dikes. And we believe we virtually completed the farmstead ring dikes. I say that with caution because as soon as you have another flood, a few more come up. But we have made significant progress in that arena.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that ends our testimony on it. I would urge the committee to seriously consider moving this bill forward as quickly as possible. I think there's great opportunities while we're fighting floods at the same time to gain some efficiencies. If we knew the money was there, I think some of the flood fights could be done a little bit differently so that we wouldn't have to spend the same dollar twice. There's also opportunities throughout the basin as well as the rest of the state where there are acquisitions that could be done. And rather than trying to sandbag these individual homes in the short run, knowing long term they're intended to be bought out, it would really be efficient to kind of move something forward more quickly so that we could deal with those rather than and put our energies towards other things rather than trying to save homes we know we're going to buy out. So with that, we really appreciate this hearing. It was a great opportunity for us. I don't know, I'd like to have all the watershed district folks stand up. They are having a day at the legislature, and we really appreciate your willingness to have a hearing right now. You see plenty of me. This is about the only time you're going to see their face now until the flood's over, and hopefully you'll be done here before that's done.
Well, why don't the watershed folks stand up, and we want to thank you all for coming down. For the most part, I guess it all from the northwest area of Minnesota. Thank you so much. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you, Mr. Harnack, for your coordination of this.
Thank you, committee.
Okay, I have several names, which I'm just going to go through just in case. Mr. Pawlowski, the mayor of Roseau, I suspect is not here.
He is here.
All right. Well, fooled me. All right. Okay, Mr. Pawlowski, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
State your name, and we look forward to your testimony.
Okay. My name is Jeff Pawlowski, the mayor of the city of Roseau. And I'm here to talk about ongoing efforts to really get the last piece of the puzzle for our to complete our flood recovery. I know many of you have been to Roseau. We were pretty much wiped out in 2002, our city of 2,800. There wasn't much left. Since then, we've rebuilt. We've constructed two major flood projects, which have helped a lot over the last three high water events we've had in 2004, 6, and 9, and another one on the way. And like I said, we're working on our final, you should have a handout, it's one page. We're working on the final part of our flood recovery, and that is it's called our East Diversion Project. It's a Corps of Engineers project, and it's messy. It's got water in it because it was taken in September, but that's okay. I told our city administrator to leave it because it shows that we're not only shovel ready, we're shovel dirty. So it's a little hokey, but we are. We've done 2 years of construction on this $39 million project. We have 2 years to go. To date, on the bottom of this handout, it's a little complicated when you got the federal, state, local share in there, but If I draw your attention to the lower right corner, you'll see total budget $39.8 million. And then in the center, the middle part, the federal share is $22.4 million. The state and local share is $17.4 million. In a nutshell, the $39 million of that, we've secured about $18 million. We either spent it or have it under grant agreement. It leaves $21 million to go. Of that $21 million, $15 million needs to come from the federal government. The remaining $6 million we're asking to be included in this year's bonding bill. And what that'll do is we're hoping, it's always, every year I've come here since we've been, since this project was authorized by Congress in 2007, it's been in the unenviable position of having to ask for state money in case we get the federal money. And we never know at this time where we're at on the federal end, so it's kind of the chicken or the egg type scenario. So this kind of turmoil going on in D.C., as you know, and the 2011 appropriations bill has not been passed, and they're working on the 2012 at the same time. Well, we're going in with the high hopes that we're going to secure our remaining federal appropriation of $15 million in the FY11, FY12 process. And if that happens, we're going to need the $6 million in state money to match it. So that's what we're asking for here. I think the language that we've discussed was that we could have up to $6 million. It could be, for example, if we secure $5 million in federal dollars, we need $2 million in state, for example. And so, again, that's all managed through Mr. Lacosmo's office, and he makes sure that the state dollars are matched accordingly. And so that's what we're asking to be included in the bill for the $6 million. It's plain and simple. We really would appreciate a bonding bill this year, and obviously we'd appreciate then being in it. So with that, I would be happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question. Would the additional then money, would that along with the federal money, complete the diversion channel? Is that what needs to be done?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. There's $21 million remaining out of the $39 million. We've secured $18 million state, federal, local dollars have already been spent. We've already built this. This picture is actually the north one. The river in Roseau flows north, like the Red River, and it flows into the Red River south of Winnipeg. And it flows north, and we actually had to start the construction of the channel on the north end. So this is actually one quarter of the 4.5 mile channel has been constructed. And it just happened that as it was under construction this fall, we had it was awfully wet up there, Senator Stump can attest. But so this picture shows it. We're hoping that once it gets built, that 99% of the time it'll be dry. It'll only be to divert. It's a 4.5 miles. It'll be to divert the water from the river on a high water event, take the top off, and divert it around the city. We've built two bridges already that have nothing underneath them, waiting for a channel. BNSF has abandoned a railroad line between Roseau and Warroad to make room for the channel. We've acquired all the land for this project, and so we're basically the only holdup is the money. And so as we wait for another scary flood forecast coming, we really, two years and we would be done. So
Mr. Mayor, this is a nice picture and it's a nice channel, but it's really not functional until we finish it, right?
It's not functional at all. That's correct.
Any questions of the mayor? If not, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We appreciate your testimony and your long drive down.
Thank you very much.
Okay, moving on, I have a Mr. Albright. Is he here tonight? Welcome, Mr. Albright, to the committee. If you would introduce yourself, give your name, and we look forward to your testimony.
Thank you. Bruce Albright, Administrator, Buffalo Red River Watershed District. We're headquartered in Barnesville, Minnesota. Red River Valley, cover parts of four counties, Clay, Becker, Wilkin, and Otter Tail. We have three projects that we are ready to complete or get started. Everything's in place except the funding to start moving dirt on them this year. They're all flood damage reduction type projects. With me today, I also have Greg Anderson, former chair of Oakport Township, to talk a little bit about that project when we get to it. The first project we are looking for some funding on is the Manston Slough Restoration Project. Some of you have been on tours and seen that. A large wetland basin that was drained by the state of Minnesota in 1890. This project will restore 1,100 acres of wetlands and provide for about 5,500 acre feet of flood damage reduction, or holding the water back when we need to prevent downstream flooding. An acre foot of water is 1 foot of water over an acre, so that's quite a bit of protection provided by that. If you look at your handout, what you should have, the wide array of partners that have come to the table to make this happen, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, Natural Resource Conservation Service. We did obtain some funding through the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, $350,000. I believe some of the first funding that has come to a watershed-type project from that group. And we still need $637,000 in state funding to make that happen. The second project that we've have brought tonight is Georgetown Flood Mitigation. Mr. Bentz testified earlier about the six projects that he's working with. This would be the seventh along that same alignment, north of Moorhead. The community of Georgetown, we did construct a levee there in 1997. Since then, the Corps has came in twice to raise that levee as an emergency measure. When the Corps comes in, they build it up, and when the flood recedes, you take it away. This would put in a more permanent levee for the community of Georgetown, approximate cost $3.5 million. And the last project that has been around for quite some time, and I can state tonight that we are about 65% completed, is the Oakport project. Protects about 450 properties north of the city of Moorhead. It will become part of the city of Moorhead in 2015, and approximately $8.7 million would finish that project in its entirety. A levee, I sometimes say, is like a chain. It's only as good as its weakest link, so we need to complete the enclosure around the area, and the levee will be fully functional. The Corps is there right now, as we speak, doing advanced measures to close up the holes where the project is not done. So with that, I would turn it over to Mr. Anderson, and he can talk a little bit about what the residents of Oakport Township have had to endure.
Charlie, just to ask, this particular neighborhood, and maybe all of those that we've heard so far, but this would be under particular watch at this point, given?
You are correct. Both the community of Georgetown, all of these areas, where applicable, we've asked the Army Corps of Engineers to come in to do advanced measures to provide protection for the flood that is going on and will go on for the next 2 or 3 weeks, depending on the weather.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
My name is Greg Anderson, sir.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Anderson, and you've stated your name. We look forward to your testimony.
Thank you very much. On behalf of about 2,000 residents in Oakport Township, we appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak to you. I know some of you have been up to Oakport. You were there for our groundbreaking ceremony. Senator Langseth is very familiar with it. A real quick history. In Oakport Township in 1997, we faced a very challenging flood, damaged well over 100, probably 200 homes that took on flood water. At that point, we moved forward to find a project where we could protect as many homes as possible. We worked on that for several years. In 2002, we went to the Buffalo Red River Watershed District because, as a small township, we did not have the ability to do this on our own. We needed help. They began working with us, and we've been working through the state to get a project underway. We began construction in about 2005 on our project, and unfortunately in 2009 we were hit with the flood of all floods. We saw a flood that was over 2 feet above the 100-year floodplain. Part of our dikes were under construction thanks to your help, but we weren't able to save those homes. In 2009, we had between 100 and 150 homes that were damaged from either flood water or sewage backup. the township of Oakport, which is, again, just a small township, in a matter of about a week to a week and a half, filled 1.3 million sandbags to attempt to protect those homes. We built more than 50 either individual or neighborhood dikes to try to protect those homes. We did what we could. We were somewhat successful, but, again, we took on a lot of damage. In 2010, we saw a similar flood looming. After the 2009 flood, we knew we really had to work on the weakest areas, and we got those prepared. We didn't have the work done in 2010, but we had enough work underway where the Corps of Engineers could come in with advanced measures and put in temporary dikes to help us out. And in 2010, for a similar flood, we reduced our sandbags from 1.3 million to about 30,000. And that told us right there that there's no doubt this is a good project. This year, again, we're moving forward. We've made a considerable work in the past year to get this ready to go. The Corps is in there to protect us, and we are very confident that we can protect these homes to a 44-foot, build a dike to a 44-foot flood. We're looking at a 42-foot dike with 2 feet of freeboard, as you've discussed earlier. We know it's going to work. We're very confident that we can protect it. Even with this snowstorm, our concerns are high, but thanks to your help and the work from the Corps, we are there to get it done. What we're here to ask this evening is just to get that additional $8 million so we can close this thing out. We have the plans in place. We have the contractors lined up for the most part. We're ready to release bids on the last 1 mile. And if we can receive funding early this year, we think we can get this almost all but completed in 2011 with just cleanup work left in 2012. We'll put this thing to rest and we won't have to come back here and ask for help. When these dikes are done, Mr. Albright mentioned it protects over 300 homes. That is correct. There are about 300 to 350 homes that are inside the dikes. In addition to those homes, what this project also does, it protects, it seals up our sanitary sewer system. And what has happened in earlier floods, when we lose the sewer system in this area, it floods all of the sanitary sewers with water, and it puts another 200 homes to the south in Oakport in danger from sewer backup requiring protection there. That sewer system also feeds the city of Moorhead, so it also puts the city of Moorhead at risk with it. And the biggest thing that we see, I dwell on this number of 1.3 million sandbags in the dikes we built, but by taking these homes out of harm's way, it allows us to not steal resources that Fargo, Moorhead, and other communities needs. It requires us not to require help from the Guard, the Corps, and everybody else. In essence, we can free up resources to better serve others. So it's more than just an Oakport project. It helps everybody else out. And truly, we thank you for your support on the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Any questions of Mr. Anderson? It's always fun to come to Oakport, but maybe... we look forward to completing this, and we'll find somebody else to visit.
That would be great. And one thing I forgot to mention in my excitement to be here, but we are ready to go on this. I mean, the sooner that we can get a bonding bill passed, assuming we're in it, we can get this work started, we can get it done. It's just a matter of giving us the go-ahead, and we're on the way.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, the next name I have on here is Mr. Netsky, I believe it is. Miss Netsky, I'm sorry. Well, we have Mr., but okay.
That's
we're,
quite okay.
We're surprised.
Good evening, Mr.
Welcome,
Chair.
Welcome, Ms. Netsky.
Committee members. My name is Carrie Netsky, and I am the Executive Director for Area 2 Minnesota River Basin Projects Incorporated, based out of Marshall, Minnesota. So we're moving out of the northwest and going southwest now. I'm here today requesting bonding, hopefully $1 million is what we're looking for our work that we do in floodplain management in the 9 very flood-prone counties of southwestern Minnesota. Before you, you should have a trifold pamphlet looking something like this. Within that summarizes our organizational history, our purpose, and kind of the work that we do within our area. The Area 2 watershed, as you'll see illustrated inside that pamphlet, stretches from Ortonville to Mankato along the south side of the Minnesota River, also includes 4 counties in South Dakota. Rather than, again, explaining the pamphlet, I'll let you look at that, and I'd rather talk about the 33-year history that Area 2 has. Area 2's approach to flood control over those past 33 years has been to basically stop the water where it falls and to build retention projects in a stair-step fashion down the Catoda Prairie, which you'll probably know better as the Buffalo Ridge. Of course, the Buffalo Ridge most people associate with all the wind generator turbines that are on it. But what you may not know about the Buffalo Ridge is that it is extremely steep and that it'll create elevation differences up to 80 feet per mile in the Lacaparra watershed and even up to 50 feet per mile in the Redwood River watershed. So when you compare that to the Red River Valley and the flatness up there, you can tell our steep grades create some extremely fast-moving water that just are extremely erosive and hard to control. Due to those steep slopes, the floodwaters become basically a horror for the people that live there and try to make a living from the land. Area 2 also suffers from a secondary form of flooding, which is rather unique. It's called crossover flooding. Not only do those floodwaters run down the Buffalo Ridge to the Minnesota River, but they can also go from Ortonville to Mankato and literally jump watersheds. The Lacaparra water can go into the Yellow Medicine, the Yellow Medicine can go into the Redwood, and on down, all the way down to Mankato. So essentially, our flooding dilemmas are twofold. Area 2 is a proven approach, allows for a landowner-friendly and voluntary solution to control those floodwaters and to reduce the damage to the stream banks, which add the sediments and nutrients to our waters. Most of the state programs address water quality. Well, in our neck of the woods, we need to address the quantity before we can even start to address the quality. Again, my testimony today is to justify your bonding request. Inside your pamphlet, on the right-hand side, there's a section that says past bonding appropriations. In that, you'll see that we have received several appropriations since 1996, and not only have we successfully used those appropriations, but the local match that we have been able to provide far exceeds the required 3-to-1 match. The local match is provided by a number of sources, primarily landowners, counties, neighboring counties, townships, wildlife and waterfowl organizations, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, as well as the 9-member counties of Area 2. These bonding funds do not pay for salaries or office space. They pay for projects. They pay for the contractors to come in and build these floodwater retarding or retention projects to help us slow those waters down. You cannot invest in a more shovel-ready project than ours, and I think our success can speak for itself. The longstanding, successful, and beneficial relationship that the state has had with Area 2, again, speaks for itself over those past 33 years. By doing our part to reduce the flooding impacts and to keep those sediments and nutrients where they belong, at the headwaters, we're bettering the Minnesota River, the Mississippi, and basically the state of Minnesota for years to come. With that, I will end my testimony and take any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Ms. Netsky. Any questions of the witness? If not, thank you very much. We appreciate you coming in today and appreciate your testimony. Moving on, I have on my list Mr. John Ehrlichson, Austin. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The City of Austin is here today to provide support for the flood mitigation bonding dollars. The City of Austin has made use of these bonding dollars in the past and is a continuing program for the City of Austin. Since 1978, we've experienced our five highest floods of record, and since 2000, we've had flood events in 2000, 2004, 2008, 2010, and as we speak today, we were having a flood event. I'm happy to report that when I left the House meeting, the Cedar River had crested and was actually on its way down. The good part of it is that the damages avoided today through today's flood event were directly related to the projects that we've done, and a big part of it has been through the dollars we've received from the DNR flood mitigation program. In the City of Austin, we've acquired 300 residential parcels to date. We've acquired 10 business parcels, and we've completed some structural projects, and we're actually out for bids on another structural project in April. The city has received funding for all of these projects through the DNR flood mitigation program, and we have avoided considerable damages through that. After the 2004 flood of record, the City of Austin actually approached the legislature for the option to have a local option sales tax. That was successful in the 2006 referendum, and we initiated that in 2007. And those dollars are dedicated towards flood mitigation. So the City of Austin does have the ability to bring a local share to this. And what we are proposing under our proposed Turtle Creek project is the City of Austin would commit 50% of those costs through our local option sales tax. And that has been well received by the community and has been supported wholeheartedly by the community. Our proposed Turtle Creek project provides relief on Turtle Creek. It involves acquisition, removal, and relocation of infrastructure and some structural mitigation. The estimated total project cost for that is $6 million, with the City of Austin providing $3 million of that proposed project cost through the local option sales tax. With that, I'll take any questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Senator Langsett.
It was either Austin or Elbert Lee that made use of quite a bit of RIM money, wasn't there? We were down there, and you had quite an area that could hold water. Was that your city, or was that?
It has been both the Shell Rock watershed and the Turtle Creek and Cedar River, and I believe Mr. Hansen will be testifying on that very shortly about the use of those RIM dollars.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Erickson? Thank you very much. Good luck to Austin. Sounds good for now. Okay, moving on. I have Mr. Zimmerman from Moorhead. Is he here?
Mayor.
It's not Mr. Zimmerman, I know that. Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Voxel, and I'm the mayor of the city of Moorhead. Moorhead right now is really gearing up strong for a flood for 2011. Our city engineer is our flood-fighting guru. And there's certain people that are expendable from the flood fight. He's not one of them. I'm allowed to come down to St. Paul. Perhaps you've heard a lot about what's going on in the Red River Valley, and a few of you may have not have ever been there, and I want to just explain what's going on in the Red River Valley. In 2009, when we had our flood of record, the New York Times had an article, and a professor talked about the topography of the Red River Valley. And basically, the Red River Valley is about as flat as this tabletop, and that's what he explained. He said it's like having a 4x8 sheet of plywood. It's about that flat. And he said the slope is similar to if you just slid a piece of paper under one end. And that's how it drains north. That gets to be why this particular area gets to be so difficult. It's excellent farmland, but it doesn't drain very easily. I do want to thank you for listening to me today. Everybody's kind of in a flood phase, it seems like, in Minnesota. Either it's coming or it's just happening. We've had a tremendous amount of water this winter. We are also part of that. What I want to do is talk about what the city of Moorhead has done for short-term flood mitigation work in the past few years. And we'll go back to that flood of record of 2009. In 2009, we saw almost 41 feet of water coming through Moorhead. Our flood stage starts at 17 feet. So that's the type of water we're getting coming through. We can go into cubic feet per second, and I don't understand it, and I know you don't even care on that, but it's a substantial amount of water. Before 2009, we had prepared our city for high flood events, but nothing ever to that level. We had gated stormwater outflows from the streets into the river. We had protected those to what we thought was a pretty reasonable level of 39 feet. We had purchased homes over many years so that we didn't have homes that were always getting flooded out. So as we approached the 2009 flood, we really felt that we had some control on what was going on. Once we went over 39 feet, we started seeing some real serious problems. Right after the crest, literally days after the river crested, my staff and I were here working with the legislature and partnering with you folks to find a way to kind of get us out of the news. It's not a good news situation when you are noted nationally year after year for having these huge flood events. This year will be the third year in a row we are going to have a major flood event. What we did in the partnership is figured out how we could get rid of a lot of these homes that were built 40, 50, 60, 80 years ago when the river was really dry and it looked like good places to build. But now that we're in a very wet cycle, are always needing a lot of sandbags, are always needing a lot of protection. What we did was we identified those homes, and in a now three-year process, it'd be the third year this year, we've been buying them out, voluntary purchase outs, but buying them out. We have also, with dollars that we've gotten from bonding, we have built gate valves with pump stations on all of our outfalls. What that does is we can shut off all of those gate valves or all those gates that are coming in. We can shut them down so we don't get water flooding back into our city. It's a public safety issue, and it's in 09 we had to voluntarily evacuate part of our city. We won't have to do that unless we get something unbelievable, which I'm hoping we never even have to talk about. The third thing we're doing with the dollars is building permanent dikes. Again, before 2009, we really felt that we were very well protected. But now that we've seen this new normal, this new wet cycle normal, we find that we need to have some dikes built that we didn't really believe we ever had to build before. We are now at the point of building almost 3 miles of dikes. We've got about 7 miles left to build. Sounds like a lot, but we've already purchased most of the homes that go in that area. I talk about this wet cycle. The Corps of Engineers has been working with us. They've been doing some very detailed analysis for a possible future diversion around the Fargo-Moorhead community. And one of the things they've noted is, even though FEMA says that our 100-year floodplain is at about a 39-foot area, they're saying, no, it's a lot higher because they have identified through their operations that we have just started a 60-year wet cycle. So what has been the old normal is no longer, and this new normal of very high floodwaters coming through our community is what we're having to live with right now. What we're asking for is to finish up our three-year program. We have really worked hard to get those first 2 years done to the point in the booklet that you have in front of you, and I'm not going to go through it. I think you guys are all able to read through it. You can get great information out of it. But what we've done for the first 2 years is get most of these things done to the point that this year, if we have the same flood event as 2009, we're going to use 40% less sandbags. One of the last pages shows that chart. If you have volunteers help make sandbags, it still costs $3 to $5 a bag by the time we're all done with it for the city of Moorhead. We have houses that use 8,000 to 12,000 sandbags. That's what we're trying to get rid of, is that group. What we want to do at the end of the day is be able to protect our city faster, and we want to be able to not use these outside resources, the National Guard, Homeland Security from the state. We don't want to use these folks to get ourselves ready for a flood. And so that's what we've been able to do to date. But again, by finishing up this project, we think that you won't have to listen to Moorhead being in the national news about being concerned about being flooded out. With that, I do thank you for listening to me today, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just do have one, and it may be in the book, and I just haven't referenced it yet. What kind of dollars are you looking for, at least, if the world was perfect right now?
$16.5 million finishes up the Moorhead project. And we have to date used, I believe it's $34 million. I don't see the number right in front of me. City of Moorhead contributed $8.2 million. We did that through a combination of special assessments, and we have stormwater fees, and we raised our stormwater fees to cover those dollars.
So, Mr. Mayor, 16 and a half kind of closes you out, and project's done as far as we know.
Yes.
Water levels at the current time?
It would protect the city of Moorhead to a 500-year flood event, and hopefully nothing ever comes that high, at least while I'm around. But we even have a contingency after that, because then we could start putting a clay down on the street. We'd abandon the houses right along the river to do that, but a 500-year flood is a frightening thought.
Questions of the mayor? Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. We appreciate
Mr.
You.
Chair, I'd just like to mention, I was reading the Clay County Historical Society one time, and they were talking about, I think it was the 1952 flood. It was 34 feet, which is 7 feet lower than we got in 2009, and they evacuated 4,200 people in Fargo and Moorhead. Now, a 34-foot flood, we hardly call a flood anymore, so we've come a long way.
Okay. Yes, I sandbagged, not that one, but as early as 65 was the first sandbag flood I dealt with. It was 37 feet, and I can remember for years afterwards people said it would never, ever, ever get higher than 37 feet. It just was such a tremendously high flood. And since I've been on mayor and before that council for 14 years, so it's been 22 years, I've lived through at least 7 floods higher than that 1965 flood.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Next on my list, I have Ms. Bev Nordby. Is she here tonight? Cedar River Watershed District? Around Austin somewhere?
Oh, sorry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm here to talk about Cedar River Watershed District. We are located in southern Minnesota, almost to Iowa, and we are bordering Iowa, and we also work with the city of Austin. But what I'm here to talk a little bit about is we are the newest watershed district in the state. We were formed to reduce flooding in the watershed along with improved water quality. I have the handout that I have is I just wanted to talk a little bit about what the Watershed Board is looking at is, the city of Austin has done a fantastic job in their flood mitigation. But what we need to do is we need to go to the watershed now and control the flows in that watershed to protect all the residents in the watershed and not just Austin. So the Watershed Board has been very aggressive in doing some modeling so we can get the most bang for our buck. And in the back of this sheet, this is the northern part of the watershed, and the green area is Dobbins Creek Watershed. It's extremely flashy. It's a high-priority area for us. The water comes up as fast as it goes down, and so we are emphasizing our efforts there. And so what we're doing is we're looking at the extreme headwaters of that watershed to try to do some retention sites. And this is just one of the retention sites that we're looking at. We're just getting started here, and so, we're not asking for a big request, but we are asking for, the project cost is $180,000, so we would be matching 50% of that. And so we're excited about it. It's shovel ready. We're ready to, we've had engineers working on it, and so we are shovel ready, and we just need to control those waters and those flows in the watershed.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Norby. And just to make sure, and I understand Austin somewhat, the terrain there is not such that it lends itself to a lot of opportunities for reservoirs, so you tend to want to use these kind of methods to retain the water.
You're exactly right, Mr. Chair. This is one of many, 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 many projects. On those green sub-watershed lines that you see, we have a flow rate goal. And this one project then will reach that flow rate goal for what we call Dobbins 6. And so we're systematically going to try to work down the Dobbins Creek watershed to lower the flows and stop that flashiness throughout the watershed.
Okay, thank you. Questions, Ms. Norby, I'm sorry? Other question? Well, thank you very much for your testimony and for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Is Ms. Judy Erickson here from the Shell Rock River Water District, Watershed District?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Judy Erickson, and I'm representing the Shell Rock River Watershed District. And I just want to thank you for including the Shell Rock River Watershed District and the City of Albert Lea and the programs eligible to receive flood hazard mitigation grants under the $55 million appropriation. We have a handout in your packets on the project that we are pursuing that is ready to go. When the funds are in place, we are ready to put this project in place. And it's the Myers Road Watershed Project. The total cost of the project is $800,000, and we're asking for $400,000 for this project. And it is part of a larger effort that we began in 2006 in the industrial park in the city of Albert Lea. And with that, Mr. Chairman, unless there's any questions, thank you for including us in the for consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Are there any questions? Thank you for being with us tonight and for your testimony. Is Mayor Smigluski here? I'm sorry. Shouldn't do that to me, Mr. Mayor. Welcome to the committee. State your name so I can get it right.
Thank you. I'm Dave Smigluski. I'm from Granite Falls. I'm the mayor of Granite Falls. I've been mayor there since 1996 and have served on the city council there since, oh my gosh, since 1979. I really appreciate the chance to come here and offer a bit of insight. To play a little bit off of Mayor Voxland's description of the Red River Valley, excuse me, the Minnesota River Valley is decidedly different than the Red River Valley. We are not tabletop flat. Several of you have been in Granite Falls on past bonding committee visits, and thank you for doing that. For those of you who haven't been there, and I, by the way, I would like to call attention to the fact that we are proud to call Granite Falls the home of Senator Kubley, who is, of course, on your committee, and we're very blessed. For Greater Minnesota to have a representative in the legislature is always wonderful, and we really appreciate all of the attention that your committee has paid to our community over the years. Granite Falls is in a very pronounced river valley. The Minnesota River falls about 25 feet from one end of our town to the other. It falls over an 18-foot dam at which the city owns this dam, at which we generate hydroelectric power for our municipal electric utility. The river valley is very confined. It's a very, like I said, a very deep gorge out in the alluvial floodplain or the glacial till out there. Very small opportunities, very few opportunities, I should say, to impound water, but rather to keep it moving through town is our goal. We have suffered some significant floods. The flood of record is in 1997. 2001, hard on the heels of that, we had another very large flood. 2009, last year again, was the fifth highest flood, and this year we are looking at a forecast that is going to put us on the par of 2010. In fact, we are doing flood preparation as we speak. We have another staff meeting tomorrow. We've had meetings with our public and told them what our plans are for flood protection. Last year was a very interesting year for us because for the first time, the amount of work that we have done in Granite Falls, largely through the courtesy of the state of Minnesota and its bonding program through this wonderful flood damage reduction program, we were able to see and demonstrate to our public the fruits of that labor. There was all at once, instead of 750,000 or 600,000 sandbags like we did in 97 and 2001, we did about 25,000 sandbags. And we did it all without any volunteer labor. We did it all with our city staff, some sentence to service help, which was always appreciated. But we didn't have to put eager and willing volunteers in harm's way along this very, very fast-moving river that goes through right through the middle of our downtown. We have houses along the Minnesota River. A number of those houses we have removed in the past. We have another set of houses in a neighborhood that we are moving to protect. They're a little bit higher, and that's all part of our program. You've got a map that we handed out. The map actually is color-coded. The red shows projects that are completed. The blue shows that projects that are in progress. And then the green are future projects. These generally correspond on the backside to a spreadsheet that ties into those things. A little bit of an apology. The backside hasn't quite been updated because we've been moving along fairly quickly. Haven't got that all updated yet. And if you total this up, we're looking at about a $33 million project that we have undertaken in Granite Falls over the years. That doesn't count some flood mitigation work that we did following the 97 flood. 97, everybody figured out this is never going to happen again. In 2001, it did. And at that point, our community said enough's enough. we need to do something, get us out of harm's way, do what we can to protect, and let's get away from sandbags. So we have redoubled our efforts in that regard. And we told our public we will do everything we can to find any dollar under any stone that we can find. To that end, we have used 9 different funding sources for flood mitigation, but the key funding source has been through the bonding committee here at the Minnesota Senate and at the Minnesota House. And that program that is administered through the DNR has been an absolute godsend for us. It has flexibility. It has it just enables us to take care of our community and to save the state money down the road. We are about $13 to $14 million into this program. That does not count the $10.5 million contract that we just awarded 2 weeks ago for the replacement of our water treatment plant, which sits right on the Minnesota River. We used to treat Minnesota River water for our drinking water. We don't do that anymore. There's no reason for the plant to sit there anymore. We're going to move it across the street out of the floodplain. That's totally locally funded with the help of the U.S. Rural Development Administration, $6 million local effort and $4 million grant effort. So when you add those together, we're about $24 million into this project. There's a little bit of, some question on how much more do we need to finish this. If you do the math, we're looking at probably $7 to $8 million. But when we really look through that, there are some variables there, and I'm thinking we can probably get this done for about $5 or $6 million. We are truly seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And for $5 or $6 million, we can finish up our buyout program. We've got a couple of businesses to deal with. We'd like to do something with the Yellow Medicine County Museum. We've got a couple of other things on the. Our town sits in 2 counties, which complicates life a little bit for us. But the main wastewater treatment lift station for the community may need to be replaced, or it may need just to be raised. We can't determine that until we actually get in there to start on the work. That may vary this amount that we need by, $800,000 to $1 million extra, but we're confident we can get everything done with another $5 to $6 million. It sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but we've made great strides, and I can't say enough about how well this program works. The DNR staff does a tremendous job of administering it. They're very fair with how they mete out these dollars. We take this money very seriously. We try to get the best bang for our buck. We, of course, only spend it with their permission. And they do a good job of stewarding this money along. The program is just terrific. And we were able to use some extra dollars here and there. We've used some Black Grant money, some other dollars from the Corps of Engineers, from FEMA, even some local TIF dollars, as we've had to redesign our downtown to get away from the Minnesota River. But again, the centerpiece of all of our flood mitigation efforts has been the flood damage reduction program that gets funded through bonding. So we would just like to see as much of that made available as possible for all communities around Minnesota. Our community has been able to take advantage of it, and we like to think of ourselves as being a poster child for how good this effort can work. We've stuck with our plan. We intend to stay with it, and we've been told that that's what we need to do. Get a plan, stay with it, keep working your way down the line, and anything that you can do to help us continue that effort and continue our momentum, we would really appreciate. I'd be glad to take any questions.
Mr. Mayor, you've been a true leader in this area for a lot of years, and thank you for that. Are there any questions of the mayor?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Rosen?
Yes, we decided over here he must have been about 12 when he got on the city council. Is that
all right? Sometimes I think it's been too long, but, there's not a lot of people standing in line for these local leadership jobs either, so it's kind of by default. We really appreciate your consideration here, though. Thank you.
We take care of ourselves in the Southwest. We're young for our age.
Thank you.
Magnus, you're a living example of that. For sure. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Mayor, and we appreciate your testimony and your efforts on behalf of your city.
Thanks so much.
Okay, to the committee, I have Mr. Lacosmo, one who has talked about floods for a long time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lacosmo. I'm the Director of Capital Investment for DNR. And
And with me, since we've heard some of these accolades, is Pat Lynch, who actually administers this program. And I should probably start off by saying that the previous announcement was not paid for by, by me, at least. We certainly appreciate those comments. And I know Mike McDonald wasn't here from Crookston, so I may just start off by saying a real brief thing about their project. It's they need $3 million to finish their flood control project, and it's a project that that protects the last phase here will protect another 183 homes, and their total project will end up protecting 842 homes in Crookston. So they have one phase of that project left, which would cost about $3 million. You've heard so far tonight from a lot of cities and a lot of watershed districts about their needs, and I have a handout that you have in your packet that on one side just shows the flood damage reduction program and what some of that history is, and on the other side is just a narrative of some of the comments that I'm going to make. And the first thing is that, and I think it's been noted here, that floods happen. They happen all over the state. They happen certainly with spring snow melt, as you're seeing around the state now. And you're also seeing, you're going to see summer rainfall flooding. That is the kind of flooding that's happened in Austin. It happened last summer in southern Minnesota. When you have 10 inches, 14 inches of rain over a large area, you're going to have flooding. We aren't going to avoid that kind of event. The Minnesota communities obviously developed along the rivers as, over the course of the last 150 years. And they're going to be subject to these type of flooding events. As far as current conditions, on the handout that I have is the website, the DNR website, and you can click on, there's a map that comes up right on the front page of the state, and it shows little dots at all of the gauges. You can click on those areas and get the actual predictions for what the flood stages are going to be in that area. The Weather Service hasn't started making predictions in all areas, but in most of those you'll see what's predicted to come, and it also has some of the history if you keep scrolling down. So that information is available. The flood mitigation program includes floodplain management, the existing zoning that you've heard about. And if you look around at the flood events that we've seen lately, this is older homes being flooded. It's not the new construction. The communities, counties are administering their floodplain ordinances as they should. Projects that you'll see is the protection of cities by levees, flood walls, pumping stations, diversions. Impoundments are a part of that, so you have a balance between the structural measures in the cities and also dealing with trying to reduce these flood flows. We aren't hearing from some communities because we do have projects that are done. East Grand Forks, Warren, Rochester, Mankato, Henderson, those have projects that have been completed, and there have been a significant amount of damages avoided because of those projects. We're nearing completion on the projects like Roseau and Breckenridge, some of the Crookston. These are nearing the final, the light at the end of the tunnel, as Mayor Smigluski said. Flood mitigation is cost-effective. The FEMA estimates are that there's $4 of benefit for every dollar spent on mitigation. I've heard other numbers that even put that ratio higher. You've heard from cities that they have a much easier flood fight now because of the investment we've made in mitigation. We've removed 2,500 houses from the floodplain over the last, 15 years or so, and in the last 3 years, 100 from the city of Moorhead, and that certainly is making their next flood fight easier. The current projects, you've heard about this list, and the list is identified in the amendment that was added tonight. In the last 2 years, the FY10 and 11 bonding bills, you appropriated $117.3 million, and 95% of that has been encumbered or spent already. It's a large number, but I think it's gone quickly. There's communities, there's a lot of need out there, and you're seeing the benefits of this. The demand has always been much greater than the available funds, and we've estimated over the $55 million that is even in this bill. I mean, this bill was written before you had a South St. Paul project of Senator Metzen's and some of those, so we do have to look at those, and we'll prioritize whatever the final number is. We'll work through the priorities. The next thing on this list was how we do that prioritization. We look at what the risk is in the communities. And we have focused on community protection, and
and we look at where the greatest risk is. Historically, if you look at where the most repetitive losses have been in the state for flood damages, those losses have been, they were in Warren and East Grand Forks and Roseau and Breckenridge, and we're done with two of those and well on the way on the other two. We look at where we get the most benefit from these projects, the readiness of the communities to spend, their ability to match, and whether or not we can leverage other funds. Leveraging other funds is somewhat risky if you get into that with the Corps of Engineers, because then you lose control of the cost and the time, because we've seen Breckenridge and Roseau projects have increased in cost quite a bit. So there is a 65% federal cost share, but that probably delays some of these projects, and it may run up the cost a bit. The basic program has a 50-50 cost share. That's been modified with the 2% median household language, and since there's a smaller local cost share, that's certainly we've seen much more interest in this, and but it's been a beneficial outcome, I believe, with using those cost share dollars that way. And that obligation for the 2% varies significantly. It was $8.2 million in Moorhead, and some of these other smaller communities, it's $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. But it's based on the formula, and we apply that uniformly. So this program, as you've heard, has allowed Minnesota to make significant advancement in breaking the damage, and then you repair it, and you're there again to be damaged. So acquisitions and these projects with levies and other things have been very good. And I believe the light is at the end of the tunnel, even for the statewide program, because we're making significant advancements in all across the state. So with that, I would stand for any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Lacaspo and Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. One is in my area, and this could be true in other areas too, there's a lot of discussion about levy recertification. Communities that have had certified levies, and now, and I think it might have been the result of the hurricane and flooding down Louisiana and New Orleans, the FEMA's seeking either higher levies or changes to the levies to try to protect the communities. What kind of a cost is this to some of these communities, and how are some of these communities going to pay for those?
Mr. Lacaspo?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, yeah, what you're talking about, you're right that I think after the Hurricane Katrina, FEMA has looked at all types of protection in the country, and that caused them to look at these levies. And if you have an accredited levy, then the area within that levy is not covered or is considered to not be in the floodplain. And one of the advantages of that is that people don't have to buy flood insurance. We would not advocate they not have flood insurance. We think everybody should have flood insurance, because you can always have a bigger flood. And that was the example in Rushford, for example. That was an accredited levy that got overtopped, and there were only like three policies in the city, and there should have been and could have been a lot more. What happens, though, they get a letter from FEMA that says they need to reevaluate the levy to see if it still is up to standards. And they're given essentially 2 years to do that process. So the municipalities have to hire a consultant to do this study and provide that information. And that probably could cost them $50,000, I suppose, to do that analysis. If it's insufficient, then they're given some time to bring it up to standards. And for example, in your area, the city of Oslo is, in fact, looking at that. And to bring their levy up to standards, they need to make some modifications. And the modifications are a capital cost that we could then fund through the flood hazard mitigation program. So it's communities across the state. There's 130 or so communities that have levies that are somewhere in the midst of this process. And that was your first question. I'm not sure if I recall a second.
Mr. Luxmo, the second question is, there, at least between North Dakota and Minnesota, there is an agreement, or I shouldn't say an agreement, because I think it was a federal court decision, that locked in certain levels or heights that levees could be. And one community, and I don't know if it's affecting other communities, but one community wants to raise the height of a road so that they wouldn't be totally isolated during floods, and each spring they basically become an island. What would you suggest you're familiar with the agreement between North Dakota and Minnesota? Is that can that be changed, and how would you go about doing that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, yes, I'm familiar with that. Could it be? And it's an agreement between Minnesota was sued by. Let's see, I'm not sure all of the parties. I think the watershed districts of Minnesota were sued by some individuals in North Dakota. It did end up in federal court. It wasn't a state-to-state lawsuit. It did end up in federal court, and there was an agreement reached that allowed for the height of the agricultural levees. And these were levees that each state was building higher, and then North Dakota built higher, Minnesota built higher. So it was eventually went through federal court, and there was a mediated agreement or an agreement reached. And right now, with this agreement, the agricultural levees in Minnesota are 1 foot higher than those agricultural levees in North Dakota. So we have been asked if we wanted to renegotiate that, and I'm not so sure that I wanted to, since our levees in Minnesota are 1 foot higher. Although there has been interest from some of the communities, and this was 20 years ago. Ron Harnack, who's here, was one of the ones involved in the early stages of that, I know. But communities like Oslo are prohibited from raising a road to provide access within the effective flow area of this agreement. So if we're going to allow increases in that, we have to renegotiate this agreement. So we have to get all of the parties together to have some discussion. DNR also has, we have ordered the Higdon Township, which is one of the townships there, had raised a road. We had ordered them to lower it to be compliant with this agreement. They've demanded a hearing, and that hearing right now is on hold while we're having some discussions and negotiations. So it's slowly moving forward.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions of Mr. Lacasmo? If not, thank you so much.
Thank you,
we
Mr.
appreciate
Chairman.
Your testimony and your work. Is Mr. Rick Larkin here from the City of St. Paul? Mr. Larkin?
Good evening, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Rick Larkin. I'm the Emergency Management Director for the City of St. Paul. Just like the mayors and the watershed officials, you're well aware that the City of St. Paul is currently facing another flood fight. This particular flood fight will be the third in the last 12 months for the City of St. Paul. Last March 24th, 1 year ago tomorrow, we reached our crest in the spring flood of 2010, just below 19 feet flood stage. And last fall, with the severe rain across much of the state and the Minnesota watershed, we reached the number 10 flood in the city's history. The March flood was number 8. Currently, as of about 2 o'clock today, our forecast for flooding in the City of St. Paul, thankfully, due to the poor weather, which we don't like to endure any more winter than we have to, but the poor weather has actually helped us in the flood fight in that it slowed down the amount of water moving into the rivers in a more controlled fashion. So we'll only reach 21 feet if all predictions hold. If, in fact, that happens, that will be the number 7 flood in the city's history. St. Paul has a long history of flooding. As a river town and a port city, we are very vital to the agricultural exports of the great state of Minnesota. St. Paul accounts for about 50% of the river exports in the upper Mississippi. So the port of St. Paul is extremely important in terms of flood protection. We have utilized the Corps of Engineers program back to the flood of record, 1965 and 1969, most recently having added to that levee that protects the west side of St. Paul in 1996. We also have a history of mitigation projects with local funding, $4 million in 1997 to buy out a repetitive loss neighborhood and create a holding pond area for heavy rain events in this north end of the city. Certainly, as Mr. Lacassimo and others have told you, that mitigation makes sense. Mitigation is really the cornerstone of emergency management because, as Mr. Rood said, he went from fighting floods to preventing damage. And really, that is the way to go. Whether it's floods or fires or any of those things, it's much, much better to prevent that on the front end. Well, in the midst of this flood fight, we have the bonding bill that you're looking at. And the only thing that the city of St. Paul would ask is that with the communities that are listed, that the city of St. Paul would be eligible for participation as well and added to the language of the bill in the Senate bill. So with that, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate the last-minute addition to the testimony. Thank you,
Mr. Larkin, and we certainly wish your city well. I asked Mr. Lacassimo yesterday. He actually got an answer. Why don't they, if you will, open up the lock and dams going down the Mississippi River, get rid of a little of this water? And there is an answer. Apparently, it's against the law, which seems like some people can change the law if they want to.
Flood Des Moines.
That's the whole federal law.
I don't know. In addition to that, apparently it doesn't work, so I won't go any further, but it makes sense to me.
Chairman?
Yes.
Chairman,
Senator Tomasoni.
I see it so bad in St. Paul that they had to move the bed and breakfast, too.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. The bed and breakfast, that has been a long time part of the Harriet Island community and the stay aboard boats and folks that live in the river community are moving out, and they're moving out with the help of the Upper River Services, which is the commercial traffic folks from the barge community. They're helping the Covington relocate.
Further questions, Mr. Larkin? Thank you so much for coming by tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good luck to your city.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Pappas.
This is actually Senator Stump's idea, but first we have to make sure that Senator Metzen isn't anywhere around within hearing distance, so that on page 1, line 16, we just have to delete south.
Oh, he's listening.
Senator Pappas, is that a motion?
Not yet.
Not yet, okay. Okay, moving on, I've noted here that the city manager of Creston is here as well. Did you want to testify wherever you are? Okay. Welcome.
Yes, Mr. Chair, my name is Keith Mickelseth. I'm actually on the city council.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Aaron Parrish is our city administrator, and well, I hadn't prepared a statement or anything.
You got a raise then. You got an advancement.
I got a raise, yeah. Right. That's right. I guess I hadn't prepared any statements, but I guess what I would say is the city of Crookston would really like to thank you for all you did for us. I think this program, the FDR program, is a great program. The state of Minnesota, the DNR, handled it very well. Kent Lacassimo has been very good to work with, and we have nothing but good things to say. And as he said earlier, we need about $3 million to complete one of our final additions, and then we'll be in pretty good shape. There'll be some minor modifications here and there, but we'll be looking pretty good. So with that, I know you're busy, and if you want to ask me some questions, go ahead.
Mr. Nichols, I just have to ask, we were up there a few years ago, and like, was the river falling, or what was, I can't remember exactly what was going on, but something very weird. Remember that?
What we see a lot of the times,
it's
when
like the river's caving in or something.
Well, the river's entrenched. The Red Lake River is entrenched, and so it's downcutting. But maybe what you're referring to, if it was during the flood times, is we have ice jams that cause a lot of issues, and it can jump 5-6 feet overnight. And so it's pretty scary.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Stump?
I think what you might be referring to is when a hotel or motel slid down the bank. The river bank actually slid right into the river.
And okay, Mr. Chair, what you're referring to is, Mr. Senator Stump is exactly right. Our ground, we have clay soils, and with the heavy moisture, it penetrates in, and down underneath, it slides, and it slid right into the river. And I'm happy to say that that the state did help us with that as well, and we're very appreciative.
So, Mr. Nicholson, no more of Crookston is sliding into the river then.
I'm not going to say that because okay. The river is entrenched, and it's the Red okay. Red Lake River especially sure. slips in a lot of places.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Tomasoni,
and sir, did you move the hockey rink?
Hockey rink is coming down, the old one that you walked through, and you walked through the locker rooms.
Smelling locker room, yeah.
The old part is down. The newest structure they're working on, and the new facility's been up and running for over a year, and. It's great, and so we're very appreciative of that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Nicholson. And Senator Tomasoni, none of us that, all of us that walked through that hockey rink will remember
they
it forever.
Mr. Chairman, I've never been in a
locker room.
It
had a special odor.
I've never been in a locker room that smelled that bad. They put, I mean,
Mr. Chair, I'll bring that back to the Crookston Times and the Kerouac. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on, I have Mr. John Jasky from the Board of Soil and Water Resources. Mr. Jasky, welcome, and state your name. And
Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you, I'm John Jasky, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. And the next testifier is here joining me kind of as a joint presentation, if you don't mind. And if you have someone who could pass this around, I don't know if the pages are still here at this hour or not, but otherwise I can just... have this someone just drop it on the corners of the table and off we go. Maybe Senator Carlson's going to do this. Thank you so much. While he's doing that, Senator Gimsey had to step out, but I think he would remind me to remind you that he had a bill that passed out of the Senator Ingebrigtsen's committee to this committee regarding a project on an extension or reauthorization, I should say, regarding Grass Lake, which. It's not a flood control project entirely. It's a kind of a multiple benefits project dealing with flood control, water quality, and habitat. So that's in the hopper in your committee as well. Mr. Chairman and members, you heard from a number of folks about the different ways that we deal with managing flood situations in the state of Minnesota. Earlier today, I emailed to your staff a copy of this report that we just completed in cooperation with the DNR and the Department of Public Safety, and I will leave you one paper copy with your staff. We sent her the link to our website where this report is posted. It gives you a good bit of background about flooding history in Minnesota, a number of disaster declarations that have occurred, you know, over the last 10 years or so. This report was required as part of the special session legislation last October in response to the floods of southern Minnesota, and I'll begin with that. The document you have in front of you is a map that shows the locations of landscapes that were damaged by the flood. And one of the ways that we respond to floods is to look at those landscapes that can no longer be left the way they were and put them into a long-term conservation use to accomplish both flood storage and flood conveyance. And we use our Reinvest in Minnesota program to do that. And there was $10 million appropriated in that special session last fall. You can see on that map that we'll there's a number of them around these 29 counties. There's probably still more to come yet. We try to get a sign-up period begun and finished, but we sometimes see projects identified as the spring melt reveals other problems, and we'll look to see if more of those come in. But bottom line is we had $10 million. We were able to get an additional $16 million of federal funding through the federal USDA program known as WRP, a Wetland Reserve Program. Those dollars are going to be used to fund 84 of about 214 applications. There's a fact sheet that should be in your packet, Mr. Chairman and members. And what we are seeking is in your legislation being proposed another $10 million, of which $7 million would be allocated to these areas that are still in need, and likely $3 million to the Red River area where you heard others speak to the combination of ways they deal with flooding projects up there. You heard Mr. Money talk about the project they're doing where they've got a combination of structures and then retired land in between. You heard the Cedar Creek Watershed District talk about their use of the program, and you'll hear Mr. Hansen talk about it as well. I should say that this is the bonding part of the flood response. There's also a cash part of it that deals with some of the slope failures and some of the things that aren't bondable, well sealing. Mr. Chairman, you remember that happening in Russia? We had a lot of wells that were damaged. We used some of those dollars to fix those wells or to take them out of use. This program has been used in the past. There's a little bit of a history there at the bottom of that fact sheet. You know, the last several appropriations from 2007 through last year are indicated there, the amounts and how they were utilized. You've come to understand that flooding is quite different in different parts of the state, and you heard about the Red River Valley. It's very flat, and the water is slow-moving but widespread. In southeastern Minnesota, during the flood of September of 2007, we experienced just the opposite, very, very high velocities concentrated in areas, and we had actually some fatalities because of that. The flood literally washed cars off the road, and people were, washed away with it, and we had fatalities there. So you see different kinds of floods and different kinds of responses are needed. But we have the programs in place, as was mentioned, under the DNR programs and under the RIM program to respond to that in either circumstance. Finally, I would point out that based on some USDA analysis, a $10 million state appropriation, which would leverage another $60 million of federal funding, would generate approximately 235 jobs either created or sustained. And I'm sure that Mr. Lacus-Most's program would do something very, very similar. You know, we have people that are hired to do this work, contractors, engineers, appraisers, realty people. These are people that are working in these local communities. We use local people to do this work. And so, again, this money helps with the response, but it also helps with some of the things that come along with that in terms of jobs and economic assistance to those communities, too. So with that, I will just point out to them on the back of this page is a few pictures if you're interested in just various ways that the lands that we see damaged through the flooding events are then dealt with through this program as well as others. And I will stand for any questions or comments after Mr. Hansen gives you a chance to hear from his particular county how they use this program to meet their flood response needs.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Justin Hansen. I work with the Moore Soil and Water Conservation District. I'm here today representing the Soil and Water Conservation Districts that were part of the flood counties for last fall's disaster. I think first, though, I would like to, if I could, speak to Senator Langseth's question earlier, Mr. Chairman, on the bonding money for Turtle Creek Watershed District a few years ago. During that sign-up, we were able to take that investment that the committee made and turn it into 17 projects. There was roughly 1,100 acres that was on the front end of that. So it was a very successful sign-up in that we had a number of really good projects that weren't even part of the funding. And I think a couple stories are going to come out of this sign-up. We were able to put a number of different landowners together, kind of puzzle-piecing some good flood reduction projects that are going to come out of this. The other thing that came out of that initiative was this review and the way that we're using RIM and WRP projects for flood reduction in our area. You heard Ms. Norby speak earlier on a project in the Cedar River. The chairman made the comment on our topography down there. We're challenged with not being able to do single big projects, so we need to do lots of little projects. And RIM is an excellent opportunity to do that. It's accepted by the folks that we do business with. The farmers appreciate it. It's not regulatory. It's all volunteer. So just to throw that out there, I guess the sign-up was successful, and we've used that to jump off and build onto other things as well. We're teaming up with townships and counties now doing road protection projects, incorporating that into our restoration and stretching the restoration costs that we get through the Board of Water Soil Resources to do more flood reduction type type things. So with that, I know I'm the last person speaking here, so I'll get you out on this. The reason I am here today is to talk about the RIM sign up for the flood damage areas. And as I said before, we've had good success in buy-in with the public on RIM projects. We had 11 applications come in on a very short sign-up opportunity. Talking with other people around the state, we knew that it was going to be very competitive. There was a lot of need for this type of program. So we actually had 9 of the 11 people who signed up for the program donate land as part of this, and that's almost unheard of in most of our RIM sign-ups. So there was definitely a need out there. We had a lot of applications around the state that really good applications that have gone unfunded. So we just like to say, you know, we're taking our most marginal land as part of these things, and we're kind of staying to that old saying, you know, farm the best and buffer the rest. And we're just trying to capture on a long-term basis these really sensitive areas. These applications are in, so these projects are ready to go. This isn't something we need to go out and drum up more business for. So we're ready to roll.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Are there questions of Mr. Hansen?
No, sir.
And the program? Mr. Jaski, anything else from you?
Mr. Chairman, I think we've given you everything you probably need. If you have questions, we'll be around today, tomorrow, and through the rest of the session. I will just mention that, you know, that and Mr. Harnack mentioned it, you know, we do leverage federal funding with these state dollars, and the sooner those state dollars are available, the more we're certain to be able to leverage. And I don't know what schedule you'll be able to be on to get this bill potentially out, but if we can count on the money and have it obligated by the state, then we can obligate federal funding that, of course, you know, is available right now. The new fiscal year will begin for them in October. They have to obligate their funding for this fiscal year by, no, you know, through August at the latest. And so the sooner we know how much we're going to have with the state, then we can get the federal money in Minnesota locked up here. And we've been very successful in getting way more than our fair share, arguably, but that's okay. We actually were the first or second state in the nation to use the federal WRP funding in Minnesota. So as soon as you can make a decision on the bill, we'll be ready to go.
Mr. Jaski, can you just ballpark, you know, what that federal money would be? Is $1 million or $100 million? Or
Mr. Chairman, it's if it was $10 million for RIM, we'd get $16 million of federal money. So for every dollar of RIM appropriated, we get $1.6 of federal money through the WRP program currently, which is authorized in the U.S. Federal Farm Bill, which is good for another 2 years and hopefully beyond that when they reauthorize it. But for the current situation, that's the ratio and that's the amount available.
Thank you very much. Any questions, additional questions from the committee? Okay, if not, thank you so much.
You.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to testify relative to flood mitigation? Well, Senator Pappas, do you have an amendment?
I do. But Senator Stump wanted to say
Senator
something.
Senator Stump.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as I mentioned before, on line 1.16, delete the word south. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I withdraw that. That joke was old. Mr. Chairman, then I would, on line 1.15, at the end of the sentence after Rushford, comma, add St. Paul. I'd appreciate the support of the members.
So, Senator Pappas, after Rushford, you would add St. Paul?
Right. Comma.
Comma, that is the motion.
If we want to do it in alphabetical order, yeah.
Okay. I don't think we need any discussion on that. I think it's plain. Anybody have any comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, and the amendment's added.
Thank you.
No more witnesses. I'm sorry, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think tonight we heard a lot of people who have either been in fighting floods, trying to prevent them, and Mr. Harnack just mentioned to me, and I had heard the story earlier in the day, but a lot of people risk their lives in these situations, and sometimes you don't think that they're that dangerous, but they really are. and a lot of damage is done and lives are lost. And I think I don't know if it was this morning or this morning or yesterday, there was a backhoe operator that just lost his life, drowned. And so I think all of us have these heroic men and women in our communities that spend a lot of time trying to save and prevent, help others and prevent further damage, and they at the same time risk their own lives. So we should probably keep him and his family in our prayers too.
Good reminder, Senator Stump, and I appreciate that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langset.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank you for having this meeting. I think this was very timely in several different ways. There are many of our people down here now today, and also the next couple of weeks you're going to be hearing an awful lot about floods in Minnesota, probably more than you want to know. But I would just mention that the earlier we could get the flood control bonding out, the more we can get done this summer. So whatever your flexibility is there would be appreciated.
Senator Langset, I can already tell you I've talked to my leadership about this. We'll certainly be talking with the House relative to this. I do also think it's important. We've got people living on the edge right now. To the extent we can help them, I think it's a good thing to do. So with that, then, without objection.
Chairman.
Yes.
Just point of information, if I could, Mr. Chairman. Is this actually the first time you've ever chaired a committee?
Senator Gerlach, it may look like that. Senator Gerlach, we haven't had many bonding committee meetings, and so yes, this would be it. This is the inauguration. And,
Mr. Chairman, welcome to the club.
Welcome to the club. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator.
We hope there'll be many more. It's such a good